I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hello and welcome to Care Talk, where we talk about health healthcare works or doesn't work in America and answer your health insurance and healthcare questions. Please text or call in your questions at 202-838-6837 so we can answer them in future episodes. And be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Today, our guest is Dr. Mina Beatroff from Doctors for America to talk about what's been going on with healthcare medical research in the past few days and how that could affect you. So welcome, Dr. Mina.
Thank you so much. And it's been a couple of days, actually. Probably I've lost track and there's been so much going on. And I know folks are getting nervous and folks are getting really, really scared. And I wanted to go over a couple of different layers of things that I've been hearing from folks, but please jump in if I'm forgetting something. I wanted to start with a quote that I've always held dear, which is that public health, when it's working well, is invisible. And that makes it really difficult to convince people that it's important or that it's worth investing or funding. But the attacks right now go beyond public health because they're actually attacking healthcare, science, research, and that actually affects our global security. And it's going to cost jobs and it's going to cost lives because these are all interconnected. So I wanted to take a moment, even though I know it's not at home, to just talk very quickly about USAID and the global health, because there is so much mis and disinformation right now. And the amount of disinformation and vitriol is really toxic. And there was a great op-ed in the New York Times by Samantha Power, who was the administrator of USAID under the Biden administration, detailing the ways that defunding USAID is really, really bad for us. But let's start with a couple of facts because of all this disinformation. USAID is a bipartisan agency. It is less than 1% of the federal budget, but this puts billions of dollars into American businesses, small businesses, and farms. It provides thousands of American jobs. So farmers make tens of thousands of food that feeds millions of people who are on the brink of starvation around the world. USAID buys medications from U.S. industries to help keep millions of people alive. They buy nutrient-rich food, for example, made in Rhode Island or Georgia, that feeds starving children. Or they have training programs in Central America, for example, so that people can get jobs and not migrate. Nearly two-thirds of the economy, of the money spent by USAID, goes into health programs, combating malaria, tuberculosis, HIV, and other infectious disease outbreaks, which hopefully after the COVID pandemic, we know is really important to our health. And all of this providing humanitarian assistance not only protects our security and our health, but it buys us capital so that it helps our national security. So what does this mean for us? Stopping USAID means no longer monitoring bird flu in 49 countries, stopping work that prevents gang violence that causes migration, not collaborating with countries like Syria so that we can decrease radicalization towards the US. And this huge amount of mis and disinformation actually comes from other countries, for example, China, Russia, because they want to fill this void. They know that this less than 1% of our federal government funding actually has such a huge impact on the world. It buys us so much security and so much goodwill that by undermining it leaves a void that other countries can fill. It is easy, though, to ignore this because we're also simultaneously fighting issues on our own front. So in the last, I think, 10 days, somebody jump in here, there were funding freezes. There were blocks on all CDC science reports. They suspended all CDC, FDA, and NIH external communications. This was all in the slew of the new executive orders. This resulted in canceling review panels for cancer research. It halted the system that states use to pay out for Medicaid. It affected school grants, educational grants for low-income students, Head Start programs, numerous research grants. One of my own actually got an order from HHS. This endangers public health on numerous levels. Lest we forget, we are in the middle of a bird flu pandemic. There's been no can be no communication, though, from the CDC, nor any reporting from their Morbidity Mortality Weekly Report on the state of that or on the state of the flu outbreaks that are coming, on the measles outbreaks that have been occurring. And let's not even discuss the potential for contamination of dairy products, cows, chickens. But beyond that, I want to make a point again about jobs and how this affects people, perhaps in their pocketbook. The $47 billion NIH budget generates $93 billion in economic activity each year. I am hard pressed to think of another program that has a 2.5-fold return on investment. Every new drug that you want your family member or loved one to have when they get sick, those scientific discoveries were funded by NIH. This allows pharma and biotech, this includes pharma and biotech productions. It allows for creative biomedical work. But that was not enough. Days later, they removed guidelines and data sets. These included CDC websites on health statistics for adolescents and school health, how to treat HIV and HIV monitoring, the CDC guidance on how to treat contraception, give contraceptions to women, and FDA websites and web pages, for example, how to enroll more diverse populations in clinical trials so we actually know that the interventions that we're studying actually will work in different populations. Now, I'm a vice president of Doctors for America. We actually did sue several offices in the federal government over the removal of these data sets and guidelines because these are absolutely necessary, not only for our day-to-day treatment of patients, but also our ongoing research. And then finally this weekend, just when I thought maybe I'd get a break, there was an announcement about indirects and cutting indirects for NIH grants. And I really need folks to understand what indirects mean and do. So these are the administrative costs of doing research, maintaining the buildings, maintaining the lab spaces, keeping the heating, the cooling, the electricity. More importantly, it covers personnel, the facilities managers, the accountants, the program managers who track the grants, the secretaries in HR, the administrative managers who buy supplies. I have multiple grants. These administrative managers have to justify with every purchase, even a $10 one, that the expense is worth the progress, the productivity, and it is the most cost-effective one to purchase. This is to ensure that taxpayer dollars are spent appropriately. I want to point out, your health insurance plan does not require this level of scrutiny for using your money. So what happens when indirects get cut by two-thirds? Well, the first thing, the most important thing, people get laid off. For example, University of Alabama, largest employer in Alabama, that they're actually facing a huge cut because of this. If cuts are made, they fire people, a lot of people. This affects businesses, this affects families. It's a huge ripple effect. So I want to tie all this back together. I said at the top, these go beyond public health. They're attacking your healthcare, your science, your research, our security. They're going to cost jobs and they cost lives. If there's an infectious outbreak, we don't have the infrastructure to handle it. We don't have the communication to alert and get help. People get sick and people die. You cut funding, people lose jobs, people lose, and that funding that goes to that help around the world costs people lives. You stop research and science. You have cancer, have a terrible accident, need technology, you may be unable to get it because those scientists have stopped working on it. And you can't get it here in this country anymore. Even if every single one of these were to reverse tomorrow, so a lot of damage has been done globally and here at home in terms of science and healthcare. So I really cannot stress enough that this is so worthwhile calling your members of Congress and letting them know that this is unacceptable. This is not safe for you now. It is not safe for your state. It's not safe for your loved ones. I wish I had better news.
That's a lot. So this attack on science and medical research, not only are local universities and small businesses, entire communities are going to suffer, but we're looking at, we'll never know the research that isn't done. We'll never know the lives that could have been saved, the drugs that could have been invented, the illnesses that could have been cured. But right now, the funding has been paused, stopped, cut. And I feel like people also should understand when you're talking about indirect costs and cutting those back, this is like saying that your restaurant will only pay for the chef and the food. Well, you also need the power to keep the building open. You need the wait staff to serve the food and take the orders. You need the power to actually cook the food. You need refrigeration so that people don't get sick with improperly stored food. You need all of the things involved in making your restaurant healthy and successful. And so if you just cut all those things, like you said, are universities going to cancel grants altogether or just lay off and hope for the best that they can get the work done with the people left?
It's going to, first of all, that is such a great description of it. And I think that you can, it helps people conceptualize what's going on here. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying that things couldn't be a little bit more efficient. They certainly could in all aspects of life, but cutting something by two-thirds, something that's so vital, and especially because right now we do have to justify every single expense. There's very little margin. So when you have such big cuts, unfortunately, it is going to be the smaller universities. It's going to be the universities where there isn't a lot of additional, like state universities, additional funds that are coming in that are going to get hit the hardest first. And the easiest place for them to make up some of these costs is firing people. So people will lose jobs. That's going to be the first place. The second place is that they will not take grants. Grants mechanisms already with these executive orders have been frozen. Some grant announcements have been pulled. Some folks are actually reconsidering whether they even want to apply for a grant because of the uncertainty. And so you're absolutely correct. We will never know what we lose. We won't know what that scientist would have done in the future or what that grant would have shown that would have changed things or sparked things or caused a new discovery. And a perfect example is our vaccines. That technology had happened decades earlier, but that technology just being there enabled folks to move very, very quickly during a deadly pandemic. So you never know what could have been and what just people and brains we've lost. But we also we're also going to be seeing with personnel leaving an inability to even enact these grants. I mean, I need these folks to help me do these grants. I can't be just the chef at the restaurant and doing the cleaning and serving the tables and maintaining the electricity and making sure that if something breaks, I fix it. That's not possible. And so if you don't have that infrastructure in place, it is impossible, even if you have a grant, to carry through with that work. So it is a really dangerous time right now. It's a dangerous time for current research. It's certainly a very disheartening time looking forward into research. And again, many of these folks are also doing the educating. I teach a ton in addition to my grants. And I'm getting calls from students. I've been fielding them now for the last couple of days saying, should I even go into this career, let alone apply for a grant? So it's a very, very disheartening and very dangerous time. I think, in the immediate terms, though, when you are laying off employees or when you're threatening their jobs or when you're actually full on threatening them, and there have been some websites targeting CDC employees and public health employees with their pictures and their names and everything like that. You lose these key folks who understand how to work with state and local officials. And we have an outbreak, a food poisoning outbreak, contamination, a viral outbreak, a disease outbreak. And we don't have folks who know how to work immediately with these groups. People get sick and people die right away. And that's going to be a terrible, terrible thing in the immediate term. And then we have all of these backed up long-term things now from science and technology taking these hits. It's devastating.
Mm-hmm. And speaking as a cancer survivor, where the science that saved my life was done in the 70s, we'll never know what discoveries are lost. And we'll never know what cures never are developed because of these cuts that are happening right now. So can you repeat, what should people do if they are upset about this?
I know that it seems like it won't do a darn thing, but you have to keep up the calls. And I just did training for doctors and scientists over the weekend on how to call their members of Congress, because many of us who went through those ACA repeals are pros at this, but a lot of scientists and doctors just thought or believed that by doing good work, it would speak for itself. And we're starting to realize now that that is not going to be enough, at least not right now with this administration. Even if your member of Congress or your legislator is not going to move on something, not going to change their mind, they have to log every call and they have to log every topic and they have to report that out. And so you get as many as 50 to 100 people calling, that'll shut an office down. Like, they're just not used to hearing from people. And they have to keep track of all of that. And maybe they don't change their vote on one thing, but now they're going to negotiate behind the doors and say, look, I'm getting a lot of pressure from my constituencies or people who vote for me. You're going to need to make some concessions. You're going to need to soften this. You're going to need to change this. Likewise, if you're in a state where folks are, you know, 100% on your side with this issue, still call them, still let them know you're paying attention, have their back. They need to be able to say, this is the most important thing. This is the thing I need to be standing up for and I need to be speaking out about. It matters. And then obviously, you know, elections seem far away, but there's some important elections that are happening in a number of states in the next couple of months, even in the next year. And look for this as a voting issue. Look, health and healthcare, they do not care what your political affiliation. I take care of people from all types of different backgrounds. The one thing they have in common is they're scared, they're sick. They want the best thing for themselves or their family member. I want to be able to provide that. I can't right now. I simply cannot right now.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Mina, even though the news is not good.
I appreciate the breaking through the mis and disinformation. I appreciate everyone. I appreciate what you're doing here, and I appreciate everyone who's listening. And you know, if you are a healthcare provider, a doctor, a medical student, a trainee, join Doctors for America, because we are a group that is working really, really hard on this. And it is a place where you can learn to be an advocate, even if you didn't know you needed to be one until now, which you should have been.
Well, thank you so much. And now I'm going to talk with Diane Archer from Just Care and Social Security Works about Medicare Advantage and what this administration might be doing. So, Diane, what changes do you expect in Medicare Advantage, the program, over the next 4 years?
So, really important question, Laura, and I wish I had a good answer. It is so hard to know what's going to happen. And that's because of a lot of things that are going on now that Dr. Mina talked about and others in terms of major administrative changes.
And also, we know a lot depends on personnel, and we just had a show on Dr. Oz and what if he will be in charge of Medicare and Medicaid, he will have a lot of influence on what those programs look like. So right now they're trying to cut funding to Medicaid in particular, but also if they are looking at cutting in Medicare, what's all that going to look like?
That's really what's interesting, because a lot of the cuts now are scary and dangerous, as Dr. Mina has said. But in Medicare, there is an opportunity to save a ton of money by eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse. And there's so much waste, fraud, and abuse that has been documented in Medicare Advantage, starting with about $83 billion a year in insurer overpayments that could be eliminated and would, you know, put a lot of money back in the government. The first Trump administration focused on cutting Medicare Advantage spending to eliminate waste. We just don't know if this new administration will target the waste in Medicare Advantage or not.
And we know that Dr. Oz supports Medicare Advantage, so it's unclear how critical he will be. So what's the harm if we're overpaying Medicare Advantage? How does that affect us?
Well, so the biggest harms are that the overpayments are really eating into the Medicare trust fund. You know, people are told, you know, Medicare is unsustainable. In fact, the trust fund has been, you know, adequately funded for the next several years for a very long time. It ebbs and flows some, but there's always enough in there. The overpayments are really cutting into that. And they're also driving up everyone's Part B premiums, including people in traditional Medicare. So the overpayments are gouging taxpayers, driving up costs for people in Medicare, and eating into the trust fund.
And what could the Trump administration, Dr. Oz or whoever's in charge of CMS, or Elon Musk and Doge, what all can any of them do about this?
Well, so every year, the administration looks at payments in Medicare Advantage and decides what the increase could be for the following year because of inflation and, you know, other cost factors. And this year was no different, and the Biden administration proposed a new payment for 2026 that actually increases payments to Medicare Advantage plans by $21 billion. So all that does in certain ways is continue to allow for these massive overpayments to the insurers. The Trump administration could finalize the Biden administration's proposed rules and actually refuse to give any increase. That would be addressing waste, fraud, and abuse.
So the insurers obviously wouldn't like that if it's going directly at their profits. What would they do about it?
Well, you are so right. I mean, anytime there is a dollar taken from them, they're out there screaming that the government is cutting people's benefits. But this is absolutely not true. What a lot of people aren't aware of is that the government is spending so much more per person in Medicare Advantage than on traditional Medicare. And the insurers have always claimed, this is how Medicare Advantage got started, that they could be more efficient than traditional Medicare. So they would still get paid exactly what people are spending in traditional Medicare. So in traditional Medicare, people get all the benefits to which they're entitled, and there would be no reason why cuts in overpayments would take away any of people's benefits in Medicare Advantage. It's just, it would take away a bunch of the health insurers' profits, which have gotten to be humongous.
And wouldn't the insurers say that they're offering extra benefits and that's why they should be paid more, that they're offering, you know, vision and dental and other things?
Absolutely. That's what they always do. That's how they lure people to sign up for Medicare Advantage. But the latest data is showing that, you know, these dental, hearing, and vision benefits, which is a lot of the reason people sign up, is actually, they're not as good as people imagine them to be. It may be the case that in some Medicare Advantage plans, they help people, but the latest research shows that people in traditional Medicare get about the same amount of dental, vision, and hearing treatment as people in Medicare Advantage, suggesting that Medicare Advantage benefits are very limited. And what we do know is those benefits in Medicare Advantage tend to restrict people to providers, to people who provide these benefits, who are hard to see. And they also often come with very high copays. So those two issues, the narrow network and the high copays, keep a lot of people from actually taking advantage of those extra benefits.
And can people actually save money with Medicare Advantage? I know the premiums are usually cheaper.
Well, okay, so everybody pays the same Part B premium in Medicare Advantage. And there, so in terms of apples to apples there, it's the same. But in Medicare Advantage, you can save money because Medicare Advantage does have an out-of-pocket limit. And so you don't need supplemental coverage as you do in traditional Medicare to protect yourself financially. On the other hand, you don't need any insurance if you're healthy. The only time you need insurance is when you're sick. And the reason you have insurance is to protect yourself when you get sick. And so the question then becomes, well, is Medicare Advantage going to help you when you're sick? And the answer is, well, maybe. But the problem is that in many instances, there is widespread delays and denials of care inappropriately by the Medicare Advantage insurers, particularly when people really need care, when they have heart attacks, when they have cancer, when they're amputees and they need rehab services. And that care is super expensive. That care people can count on in traditional Medicare. But when you go into Medicare Advantage, you're taking a big gamble and you may not be able to get that care. And that's why we see disproportionate numbers of people who are super sick in traditional Medicare and many more healthy people in Medicare Advantage. But it can be very hard to switch out of Medicare Advantage into traditional Medicare once you're sick.
And speaking of switching, open enrollment for Medicare Advantage is going on right now. So tell us, what does that mean?
Well, what that means is that you have a chance to look again at your Medicare Advantage plan and compare it to what you might get in traditional Medicare or a different Medicare Advantage plan. In traditional Medicare, you should know that you can get your care and it will be covered from almost any doctor or hospital anywhere in the country without delays, without denials, in almost all cases. In Medicare Advantage, that's just not the case. So if you could switch to traditional Medicare, if you want that protection, if you do feel some concern that tomorrow is another day and you may develop some serious illness or fall and take a big fall and break a hip, and you want to be protected, then consider going into traditional Medicare. You will need to know that you can buy supplemental coverage to protect you from costs that you're obligated to pay. And you will need to also buy supplemental Part D drug coverage. But those costs compared to what your costs could be in Medicare Advantage if you do become sick are actually smaller. So it's just a question of how much of a gamble you want to take. But the government does allow you to switch out from now through the end of March of this year.
Thank you, Diane. Our next question is from Decoding Fox News. They say that I'm having major problems with my health insurance company, Oscar. The story is too complicated to explain, but they changed their plan from 2024 to 2025. I got the first shot of a vaccine at CVS in late 2024. I was supposed to get the second shot this week, but now Oscar won't pay for it at a CVS. My insurer referred me to Amazon Medical, which requires a yearly fee of $199 for a vaccine that's supposed to be covered by any plan on the Affordable Care Act exchange. So, Louise, can you tell us what's going on and maybe what can they do about it?
Well, there's a couple possibilities. Assuming this is a vaccine that's routinely recommended for everyone, which you can go on healthcare.gov's preventive care page and see a list of all the vaccines that are routinely recommended for everyone and that health plans have to cover. Assuming this vaccine is on that list, then this health plan is not in compliance with the law. They cannot require you to go to a provider who has a fee either associated with like getting a membership or who's going to charge a separate fee to administer the vaccine. Everything about that vaccine has to be fully paid by the health plan, including the cost of the actual vaccine itself, as well as any administration costs that go along with it. They don't necessarily have to keep the same providers from one year to the next. So it's quite possible that they were allowing coverage at CVS last year and no longer have CVS in their network this year and are going to make you go to a different provider, a different pharmacy or medical office, but there can't be any cost to you with that. So if that is not the case, if they don't have an in-network pharmacy or medical office where you can go and get this vaccine, you can submit a formal complaint to your insurance department, and they will address the issue. The other possibility is that this isn't a vaccine that's routinely recommended. Let's say, for example, it's rabies vaccine because you had an animal exposure, or it's certain vaccines associated with travel. Health plans are not required to cover those at all or with zero cost sharing. So it's possible that the plan, say, for example, used to cover the full cost of a rabies vaccine and has changed in 2025. So that is the other possibility. That is much less likely because most people aren't getting vaccines that aren't on the normal vaccine schedule, but that is something to keep in mind. And in this case, we are talking about an Oscar plan. It sounds like purchased in the marketplace. So these plans are all required to cover the routinely recommended vaccines. But one other reason that people sometimes will find that their plan doesn't cover the full cost of a routine vaccine is if the health plan is grandfathered. That would not be the case for this person because they bought their plan in the marketplace. But if you have a plan that has been around since before March of 2010, when the ACA was signed into law, and you still have that coverage, this is most common with employer coverage, but sometimes people still have these plans in the individual market too. Those plans are not required to cover the full cost of vaccines. So that's just one other possibility if you're dealing with your health insurance and finding out that you have to pay a fee to, say, get your kids MMR.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Louise. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions to 202-838-6837 so that we can get you answers in future weeks. And be sure to join us next week for more. And also subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This is Care Talk.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.